That was Wallace Bird, and that track is Encore. You can probably just about hear Kit Richardson and her band crashing their way out with their drums and guitars and amps. They just about managed to get themselves out of the studio during that track so that we could get our next guests in. And we're going to have a discussion, as I've been saying, about monogamy, which is something that interests me a great deal, so much so that I've decided to write my next Edinburgh show all about this subject, because I think it's very interesting, the different, well, perhaps not different, but maybe different attitudes that men and women have about monogamy. Of course, the cliche is that gay men are having lots of open relationships and lots of sex, and I might ask Nick Field about that, and that lesbians are sort of settling into their domesticity with cats and pizzas and probably give up on sex altogether and just sort of wear their slippers. And quite frankly, I'm not sure I'm happy with this. So I've decided to have a bit of a chat about what's going on and whether these cliches are true and what alternatives there are maybe really to keep the sex alive in a relationship. And I'm joined by Juliet Price. Is that how I say it, Juliet?
Yes. Well done. Thank you.
Who is the founder of a fabulous sounding website, Pink Lobster Dating, which is the Europe's only dating network for lipstick lesbians. Is that right?
It is right, Rosie, yes.
And that was quite fascinating, really. I thought, why hasn't anyone else done that?
You know, it's amazing, actually. I was quite excited that I'm the first. When I did research to find out if anyone had done this, I was amazed. And actually, there's only one in America, and it's a really bad one. I'm not just saying that because mine's so good.
I hope they're not listening.
Well, the Americans actually have asked me to do one in America because this one's so bad. But yeah, I mean, there's lots of reasons behind why I set it up, because obviously I'm a lipstick lesbian.
Yes, and you are. I can verify. Yes. She's wearing lipstick.
I'm wearing lipstick and a dress. Yeah, that's not the way you can verify lipstick lesbian.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Is there a ruder way?
I don't know.
I don't know. But
yeah, that might come up in the monogamy thing later.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But yeah, obviously it's for lipstick lesbians primarily, because as a lipstick lesbian, you can't spot if that woman's gay or not.
So that's right.
There's many embarrassing situations where you go up and ask out a straight woman. Now, obviously, you might want to turn her, but you might want a real lesbian. And obviously, in Pink Lobster Dating, you can find other lipstick lesbians.
Although it has to be said that sometimes you cannot always assume a very butch-looking woman is actually gay.
Yeah.
Especially it depends what country you're in. I mean, I sort of know a friend of mine who it's kind of, you know, a bit silly, but she sort of plays a game and says, is she gay or is she German? My German producer is pulling a face. But, you know, I think just, you know, around the world, there are different looks, aren't there?
And
lots of women look.
And it's not just about how you look. Of course, it's not just about how you look. It's how you feel as well.
Exactly.
And I think some women on my site, you could say they might look bitch, but they might feel feminine. So it's about how you feel.
Oh, exactly.
Well. It's not just about how you look.
I know. One time a friend of mine, when I was in with my first sort of proper serious girlfriend that I lived with, she said, I think I was, I'm trying to remember which way round it was, I was a femmy butch and my girlfriend was a butchy femme. I don't even really know what that means, to be honest.
Like a chapstick.
But this friend that said it was called Ben anyway, so she was kind of, I don't know. But I thought that was quite interesting. I think she was kind of saying that I sort of seem more femme on the outside but was more butch inside.
I think the other thing about Pink Lobster Dating is, as a feminine looking woman, you often get a lot of harassment from men.
Oh, and definitely.
And also there's always a thing on, when I was on dating sites, I would have a lot of men asking me out and a lot of women asking me for threesomes. And as a lesbian, I don't want to have a man. I don't want to have a threesome. I just want to have a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, as a lipstick lesbian, we're still seen as fantasy figures for men.
Oh, absolutely.
And also for straight women who want to have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what the important thing is. You can go on there and you don't have to have that fear of, am I going to be asked for a threesome? Am I going to be asked out by men, as always?
Can I just ask?
Well, this is, let me introduce you first. Emma Ziff is also with us, who is Pink Lobster's sort of resident sex and relationships expert. But also, more widely than that, you've done lots of broadcasting and all kinds of sex and relationship advice and broadcasting. So, hello, Emma Ziff.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi, Rosie.
And you were going to ask Juliet something.
Yeah, no,
there.
I was just curious to know if you ever feel that it's great when the man compliments you or says something nice, or do you tend to go to, oh, God, here we go?
I tend to go, here we go.
Mm.
Yeah, I do. because I think I don't get angry at them. I don't think, oh my god, get in my way. But it's difficult because I think a lot of men, I don't know what it is about me, but I don't get asked out by men that often. And men look at me, and all of my friends would go, he's checked you out, but they don't actually ask me. I don't know whether it's because I've got this vibe of stay away, or you know, whatever it could be, this sort of like exterior stay away, don't come near me. But and men do look, but they don't actually touch or ask that often, so I haven't got that big dilemma.
I actually think it can be quite nice to get a bit of attention from a man, you know, obviously if it's not too sort of forceful, but no. I think sometimes I quite like it. I occasionally find it quite funny, actually quite comical almost, especially when I've just done all my material about being a lesbian. If a guy comes up to me after a gig and sort of chats me up, and I sort of find that quite interesting, really.
That's something else. That's them,
wanting to sort of, you know, kind of, it's a bit of a challenge, isn't it,
I suppose. I think actually gay man, it's a compliment from a gay man. To me, that's the best compliment, rather than from a straight man or a lesbian. If I get a compliment from a gay man, I think, that's great. I don't know why, but I like it. So if you want to compliment me, then you're welcome to.
Well...
Absolutely.
It won't really mean anything now, will it? No, because she sort of set you up. You've got to compliment her, really.
I mean it. You've got a very attractive lady over there.
Ooh. Gosh, you did that well. I must have learned some tips from you, Nick. Well, anyway, I was sort of interested in this idea about monogamy because there was actually a US study that was done, that if you look up US Today and if you Google are lesbians monogamous, lots of interesting things come up. They studied about, well, getting on for 7,000 men and women in the years 1975 and 2000, and they actually found, it surprised me a great deal, less extramarital or relational sexual behaviour in the year 2000 than in 1975, which I suppose in some ways makes sense because the 70s there was a lot of sort of, you know, kind of the whole key parties and that whole swinging scene was very vibrant, and it was before, of course, AIDS and HIV, and so people hadn't got sort of, you know, scared about more casual sex as they did in the 80s. But I thought it was very interesting statistics. Heterosexual men had gone down from having extra relationships outside their marriage from 28% down to 10%. Heterosexual women had gone from 23% to 14%, which I thought was really interesting because now they've actually overtaken heterosexual men, which is very interesting indeed. Gay men had gone down from 83% to 59%. Wow. And lesbians had gone down from 28% down to 8%. Mm. So... certainly on those statistics, lesbians were the most monogamous. And also, in preparation for my Edinburgh show, Is Monogamy Dead? I've done my own survey, which is up on surveymonkey.com, and I had a lot of straight people responding first of all. I tweeted it out, and it's just sort of quite random. Different people retweeted it. And the number of people who said that they'd had an affair was around about half. It was around about 50%, which certainly in books I'd read that seemed about right. But then what was really interesting, as I put it on my Facebook wall and a lot more lesbians started responding for a while, the ratio of people who were monogamous and said they had not cheated or had not had an affair, however you define cheating, that actually started to go up.
So I thought, more were cheating?
No, less were cheating. Okay. Or how, I mean, I've put another question on there about how you actually define, you know, unacceptable behaviour, because that varies a great deal, obviously. And, you know, some people, it might be sleeping with someone else, some people it might be kissing somebody, or it might be, thinking about somebody else, because I thought surely nobody will actually police whether their partner is thinking about somebody else. And some people said, yes, that would be unacceptable. So that's pretty scary, isn't it, Nick? What do you think?
That sounds intense.
Yeah.
You can't really police what people are thinking, that's the trouble.
Well, no, I don't really know how you would sort of vet that.
Stop thinking about that person.
You'd have to stop thinking altogether, wouldn't you, really?
Well, in a lot of cases, that might not be hard.
Are you talking about any of your
previous... from experience. Yeah, I think monogamy and gay men is a very interesting one. Because I only know one long-term gay couple that are monogamous, I think...
Oh, right, you're not even sure in that case.
I'm pretty sure they are, but out of a lot of people I know, I don't. I think it tends to be a lot more open. I think they reach
open
a point
relationships
where people seem to almost feel obliged to at least have the discussion about whether or not they should have an open relationship.
But do you think, in some ways, have gay men got it right? You know, in some ways, is it more honest that you know, effectively, if 50% of people are having an affair, which surely that can't be a good thing because it involves lying to your partner, maybe it's better to sort of acknowledge that it's quite a human thing to be simultaneously attracted to different people. Yeah. And if maybe it's better to actually have a discussion and negotiate that. I mean, I'm amazed about how many couples don't actually talk about these boundaries at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I think honesty is obviously always best in a relationship. And probably if you can get to that point with someone where you can say, should we open this up or not, then I think that seems like a really healthy thing to do. Whether or not it then works out is another matter.
Emma, what do you think about this? Do you know of couples successfully negotiating more open sexual arrangement?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say something about the statistics. I've got a thing about statistics.
That you can say whatever you want with them, can't you?
They're rubbish. Because,
yeah, of course.
I mean, lots of people don't necessarily tell the truth.
Yes.
Some people might want to look good, whatever it may be. Statistics are never going to be, you know, not going to have necessarily the truth in them.
No. And do you think, though, I mean, if... you know, there could be a trend, couldn't there, which obviously individual people might absolutely be lying, but I don't know, we have a tendency on these things to sort of be quite open and tell the truth. I was quite stunned by some of the comments people had put into my survey, like that people seem to really want to share this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, there's lots of different factors. You mentioned that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily find... you know, someone chatting, you know, chatting to someone, you know, as being unfaithful. Some people might think, you know, just chatting up another woman might be unfaithful. So,
yeah,
you know, there's lots of different things in terms of bringing in other partners into relationships. There's a lot of couples are doing it openly. And a lot of couples come to me to look into it before they do it, whether or not it's a good idea or not. The one challenge you're always going to have is one is going to want to do it more than the other on some level,
yeah, yeah.
Whether it's, you know, a big difference or marginally. And the one thing I always say to people is, you know, you need to look at, you know, the possibilities and the pros and cons of everything.
And of course, safe sex as well. We must stress that.
Yeah, I mean, look, what is safe sex as well?
Wow.
You know, some people might consider, you know, using a condom safe sex. Some people, you know, might use, a lot of lesbians might not use something like, you know, a dental dam.
Well,
some might,
so I know. I mean, I think to be really honest, I think it seemed a little patronising when there was a big effort to try and include lesbians in the whole safe sex debate, and there was sort of, we're all given dental dams and things because essentially we're not as at risk, you know, and I think it's a lot of common sense a lot of the time, isn't it?
You'd hope so.
Well,
but
yes,
there's also there's a big crossover. There's a lot of people who, you know, consider themselves, you know, bisexual, whatever it is. So you're not quite sure who you're going to be with, really, and what their history is. So there's lots of stuff.
Yeah, of course.
I go a lot when you're with someone. There's a lot about gut feeling anyway. You know, your intuition about someone, whether or not you should be spending time with them or not. And if you know that they're not having safe sex, unless you want to. A lot of people, that's a big fetish for people as well. Mm-hmm. You know, about having unsafe sex. It's that kind of excitement.
Yes.
Which is a whole other thing.
Well, to some extent, is that the appeal of an affair in the first place? Not that it's unsafe sex in a health sense, but in a psychological sense, it's unsafe. There's an element of danger. There's that hothouse effect of sort of intensifying the passion because it is a secret. And there's that... stress. There's all those stress hormones being released.
There's so many different reasons. I mean, some people might do it for the thrill, for the excitement.
Yeah.
Like, might get caught.
Yeah, exactly.
Want something a bit different. You know, different scenarios at work or whatever it might be for someone. But in the day, it could be just, you know, they don't want to hurt their partner. They're too worried about, you know, leaving someone because
they don't
kids
want to tell
and
them.
Lots, there's so yeah. many different reasons why someone might have an extramarital affair a relationship outside their partner.
Yeah.
But some people are really happy about it and bring it in, you know, all together.
Yeah.
Some it can work really well because they're very happy. We mentioned this earlier. They're very happy spiritually within themselves. They're very confident as a couple that they could give some extra loving to somebody else and bring them into the relationship. And there are lots of threesomes that live together very happily.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've been reading all about and meeting a lot of polyamorous people, and in some ways it sort of seems like, you know, sort of taking the emotion out of it and sort of thoughts about jealousy and things like that, which actually most of the polyamorous people I've met have really you know, kind of managed those feelings incredibly well. But sort of looking at it rationally, it seems like, in some ways, a very sensible thing to do, because, you know, the neuroscience of love is that, you know, love changes from a very passionate kind of love into a more companionate kind of love. And however much you might try to keep things alive, that's just the process of falling in love. There's a very different brain system engaged in a longer term relationship. It's a very different set of needs that are met. And to some extent, you know, perhaps the way of still keeping your own sense of sexual self alive would be to be able to have new partners along the way when you've got a longer term partner that you're also very committed to. I'm just suggesting this to you. I don't know.
And this is what's so great, though, about, you know, such a big world, and how easy it is to get around the world now to meet people from different walks of life who can fit with how you'd like to live and the kind of relationship you want. I mean, you know, I'm working with Juliet to, you know, help do some, you know, work around kind of sex and relationships for Pink Lobster Dating. And, you know, and you've got a site like that for women, you know, feminine women who like other feminine women. Yeah. And so it's a lot more narrow. So there's lots of sites where people can go looking for something that would work, as long as there needs to be some sort of as long as there's communication within a relationship. If you want to bring someone else into it, there's a lot of communication going on.
Of course, yeah. Well, let's perhaps talk about bringing the web in, because of course Pink Lobster is your baby, Juliet, and I think perhaps the internet is really part of why there is this growing culture of people talking about multiple relationships or talking about just different choices. And I think perhaps why people who are monogamous have a faster and faster turnover of serial monogamy. Certainly just among, you know, sort of anecdotally among my friends, you know, it does seem people go from relationship to relationship, because is there this paradox of choice that, because there are so many internet dating sites out there, is this idea that, you know, you have to keep looking for the one because there are so many choices available?
I think actually that's quite a good point. It's not so much about cheating, but it's about finding the right one.
Yes.
So from what I understand, a lot of lesbians now, historically, obviously they would stay in a relationship, they'd stay in that relationship forever, they'd move in after 2 weeks, they'd get the cat, it'd be done, and they'd stay there. But I suppose now they're thinking, you know, maybe this isn't working, I don't know if I'm going to cheat, but maybe I'll go and find somebody else because there's more choice. I think it's not necessarily they're going to go and cheat.
Well, I don't think anyone consciously goes out to do that, or do they? I mean, there are, of course, married dating sites now, aren't
there? The thing is, for lesbians, is if you had a cheating site for lesbians, they'd all know each other. So you'd have a problem, wouldn't you?
Well, I'm curious about this. How do married dating sites work then? Because you can't be sure of anonymity, can you? How can you be sure that your partner's not on the same site, Emma?
Exactly, you can see photos and things. So I always wondered about that. I mean, unless you're honest with your partner, you can get caught out by that.
I must have liked
it happen.
But people are really silly about things like that. They don't think about it. They go, oh, yeah, I want a bit on the side. Let's put all my information out there. I work at so-and-so. And
I think actually with lesbians, on the dating sites, often they want to meet friends. Now, on a straight site, you wouldn't normally get a man or woman saying, I want to make friends, no. But on a lesbian site, I know one of my ex-girlfriends, she used to actually still stay on Plenty of Fish and say she wanted to make friends. And I
was she being honest?
Exactly. I don't think so. because I think anybody that goes around there and says they want to make friends, okay, fine, you want to make friends, but why are you using a dating site? Why don't you go on forums? Why don't you do that? I mean, my site has got the option to make friends, and I know there's a couple of genuine women who have actually spoken to me and said, I really want to make friends, can I use your site for that? Mm-hmm. And they genuinely want to make friends because they feel quite isolated, they want other lesbian feminine friends.
That's perfectly fine.
Because they were honest, you know, they asked me and I said, yeah, of course you can, but I think if you're in a long-term relationship and you're going for friends, this is where I think the issue comes in with a lot of lesbians and becoming very close to their friends, and then will that then lead to something else, especially if they're both on a dating site?
Yes.
You know, how much is it actually really about?
Well, I think this issue of lesbians keeping friends with their exes is quite interesting as well, because we've talked about sort of polyamorous setups, and to some extent that's different again to an open relationship, which tends to be about having extra sexual partners, whereas polyamory is about multiple loving relationships. And to some extent you could argue that lesbians are all polyamorous, because we've often got friends we're incredibly close to, and not just one, you know, several, and one or two of them might be ex-partners we've had an intense relationship
with. When you say incredibly close, I mean, what are you talking about?
Well, no, I mean, I'm not talking about a sexual relationship, but I'm talking about if you're friends with an ex that you had a very long relationship with, there's just, you know, you can't avoid it. However much you say, oh, you know, we don't have those feelings for each other anymore, there's a very intense connection about someone you've had, you've lived with, or you've had a very deep relationship with. And it's always slightly threatening to a new relationship, perhaps.
I think some lesbians are more inclined to stay friends with exes than others. I mean, for me, I've got my one long-term partner that I still see once and again, but I wouldn't call her a friend. I see her just to catch up, we have a chat, and we're very clear that we've got those boundaries. But I mean, I wouldn't just randomly text her, I wouldn't do all that. And to me, you know, if a partner comes to me and says, I want to constantly go and see my ex-girlfriends, I want to go out with them without you all the time, I'd be a little bit dubious about that as well. Because I think, well, what am I not giving them? You know, have you not got friends that you can just be friends with? Why do you have to have your ex-girlfriends? And I wonder whether some lesbians need that connection, and they need that sort of acceptance maybe with their ex-girlfriends. I don't know why they have that need to stay with their exes.
I don't know, but I think there is a general need for connection. I think it's a very human thing, and I think you know, a lot of writers have written about adultery and in some ways sort of, you know, saying it's a necessary thing. I mean, Alain de Botton has written about sex being an escape from loneliness, particularly sort of adulterous sex, because that's a very different sort of hormonal thing than sex during a long-term relationship, you know. I mean, obviously, you know about the sort of neuroscience of it, and the chemicals that are released when you have sex with a new partner are very different, aren't they? There's a lot more dopamine. It's just a very different experience.
Yeah. Dopamine obviously is very, very high, and so you think that it has this, oh, I'm in love. It's called the love, you know, the love hormone, and and it's not, it's the lust hormone. So it's you know, it's obviously that sex feeling. It feels
but
great.
We might sort of write it off and sort of say, oh, it's just that, but it's actually great. And
of course,
let's not forget that
it's a fantastic feeling. But I think this is where a lot of people make mistakes, where they think that they're rushing into things and thinking something is love, when actually they can have sex and enjoy it as sex. And I wrote a book about this, that, you know, enjoy it and be in the moment to enjoy it. A lot of women, especially heterosexual women, you know, they can have sex with a man the first time, and suddenly as they're lying there or whatever they're doing, they're thinking, oh, you know, this is my husband, and, you know, he'd be, oh, I can see the kids now and the picket fence. And you're thinking, no, just be in the moment, enjoy it, and just enjoy the sex. Because you know, a lot of, and look, this happens with all sexual couples, that they're wondering what's going to happen the next day when they haven't heard from him. It's because they can sense it. They can sense that this is going on. It happens with you know, same-sex couples as well, absolutely, where there's a lot of pressure that's put on it instead of actually just enjoying sex for
and
what it is.
Is it that pressure that stifles that sexual energy?
Yeah, well, what's happening is that you can sense it. You just know what it is. Energetically, you know that there's something that's good, that's pushing you away from somebody because it's, you know, it's too intense, rather than enjoying that sexual feeling for what it is.
This is why you think then a lot of lesbian couples, they mistake lust for love. They then move in very quickly, and then they've got that dilemma where they're living together after 2 weeks,
and it's all a bit too much.
And then they then have to cheat because they're actually really not in love. Is that maybe going to be
very possible?
Yeah,
possibly.
And how could a couple who are in love and who are happy and maybe have moved in together and got the cat and everything, or a dog? Oh, you're a dog person.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm a dog person.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope you declare that on your dating profile. well, of course, you're in a relationship now, so you shouldn't have one.
I like snakes, but that's okay.
Oh, snakes! Goodness, I don't even know what that says about you, Emma. But how could a couple, if they wanted to revitalise that spark, that feeling of the new relationship sex, are there ways to do that, to fool the brain?
Well, I'll tell you what's quite interesting is, we were talking about this before. I was telling Juliet about the 5 love languages by Gary Chapman. And if you look it up, he has got a site, and you can actually do the it's like a quiz there. And it takes a little while, 20 minutes, half an hour to do it, and lots of questions. And it will tell you what your love language is.
Oh.
And what's great about it is you'll then start to know from your partner the things that excite them, or the things that will draw them in. So you've got acts of service, so bringing you cups of tea in the morning, or doing the washing for you, things like that. You've got words of affirmation. I love you, you look great, you're sexy, all that. You've got then, I'm trying to think of all of them, touch, so
yeah.
Touching, lots of touching.
Yeah.
He doesn't like that.
Do you mean sort of just touching, nice
well,
touching,
you know,
not sexual?
Some people wouldn't necessarily furniture. Like to touch. Some people aren't very touchy. If you go to touch them, you can see them flinch almost. And
there's some interesting body language going on.
Touch me anytime.
Okay. Time, spending a lot of time with someone. So that's another one. And then the fifth one was... gifts, so buying someone gifts. And if you know what your partner likes, you can actually kind of do some fun stuff around that. You know, there's nothing greater if you know that your partner loves little messages and things like that.
Yes.
If they like, you know, words of affirmation, you know, like that, then you know that you can write something sexy or something to her. Mm. So there's lots of different ways you can
do it. And I suppose if you know your partner likes giving gifts or likes leaving messages, you could sort of enjoy... Make sure that you enjoy that.
Well, exactly.
Think about receiving it, I suppose.
Well, this is
I think that's the thing, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, you're very spot on with that. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of people are givers and a lot of people like to receive. And the thing is that givers aren't great at receiving. Yes, all right. I can see all the winks and the nudges going on. Lots of givers are not great at receiving. So it's about acknowledging somebody else and actually allowing that, allowing them to receive, because that's really important in a relationship. And if you don't acknowledge that, then they'll feel snubbed if you don't.
Interesting. Mm. Nick, I just quickly... this is so interesting. I'd love to talk about this more. Well, maybe we'll all chat on Twitter later on. We'll tweet each other. We'll continue the discussion. You can tweet me at Rosie Wilby and we'll tweet later. But, Nick, I quickly wanted to talk about the relationship between sex and creativity.
Yes.
Because I think that's fascinating, because I've sort of... thought in my own life, periods where there's a high sexual activity are also periods of high creativity. Do you find that?
I agree with that. I think sex can be amazingly liberating, and you know, it's a stimulation of that relationship with someone and exploring that, and then lots of different relationships with lots of different people. I think that can fire lots of different creative responses. Absolutely.
Mm. I think it's really interesting. And Juliet, obviously we're talking about married dating sites. Is your honest assessment of Pink Lobster that people on there are genuinely single and being honest on there? What's your sort of feeling?
Actually, I had a look earlier, and there's different tick boxes. So you can either tick whether you're in a relationship, whether you're single, whether you're dating, whether you're looking for a bit of fun. You've got options. And I think it was like 2%. Roughly, I didn't do an exact percentage.
There was like six people.
Yeah, six people. Only six people at the whole site said they were looking for a bit of fun. Everyone else was looking for a relationship. Maybe that says about a lot about Pink Lobster Dating, that it's, you know, that's the kind of way I'm selling it. I'm selling it as a sort of a site for relationships rather than a site for sex.
Sure. I think if you did those stats on Gaydar, it might be different.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Grindr. 100%.
That's why I think you need Pink Lobster Dating and other sites. A lot of people have said that.
For different needs,
because a lot of people say I'm fed up of Gaydar. All these other sites where it's all about sex. They want a site where they can go on and they can have a relationship. And a lot of actually women email me from the site directly and ask me for advice about how to get the relationship going. And it's really interesting because so many of them are just desperate for a relationship. They don't just want to go and hunt and have sex. And that's why I've got people like Emma and other people giving that advice, because that's what they really want on Pink Lobster Dating anyway.
But I think sometimes it's great to have sex as well. You know,
they can have sex as well.
And I think it's good not to feel ashamed about that. I think lesbians particularly, I think, because, you know, we are, I suppose, very diametrically opposite to gay men in a sense. There's less testosterone. And just, I think, culturally, women are trained to think differently about sex and wanting sex. And there is often this deep-rooted sort of shame. If you feel that you want sex or you really enjoy sex or you want more sex, you feel guilty about asking for it. So I think that's important
as
well.
Is that a woman issue rather than a lesbian issue, though? Because
probably,
even nowadays,
yes,
it's still an issue. You know, women are called slags, if that's a related
thing. Exactly, it's a very double standard.
As opposed to men. And I think that's just women full stop. And I think that is changing now.
I think so.
It's becoming more acceptable for women in general, whether they're straight or whether they're gay, to actually say, look, I want sex, as long as they're honest about it. I think that's a key thing, because I think a lot of women, especially lesbians, if one of them wants sex and the other one doesn't, there's going to be that false hope there. And they need to be honest.
It's only other people's judgment. And as long as, you know, you're being true to yourself and it works for yourself, absolutely.
Yeah. And just quickly, what you mentioned the word key, and that reminded me, I was thinking about the key parties that straight swinging couples used to have in the 70s. And as far as I know, it's not really ever been a lesbian phenomenon. I mean, there were sort of lesbian communes in the 70s, I think, who sort of rejected monogamy because it was sort of a patriarchal concept in their eyes. But I don't know of lots of lesbian key parties, and I just wondered what one of those might be like.
I do one on Pink Lots of Days?
Yeah. Well, no.
Just for you.
Well, your site is all about relationships, so it's a different thing. But I just thought it would be fun, wouldn't it?
Because maybe Emma and I can set up a key
lesbians
party.
Tend to have keys on a very heavy chain, don't they? So you'd have to have a very sturdy bowl, I thought, to put the keys in.
Yes.
They do lock and key parties, don't they, now?
Lock and key. Oh, yes, that's true. I've heard of that. Yes. I don't even quite know how that works. I've not been to one. But, look, let's continue the discussion on Twitter. You can tweet me and I shall be tweeting. I'll tweet you girls later on. And so Nick will continue the discussion on Twitter. And we need to play out now. We need to finish off the show. We'll play out with a little bit of Marcus Tolliver, who is going to be on the show in a couple of weeks. And I thought, seeing as it's been a bit rainy today, we would play this track, The Weatherman. See you next week.